Over the last two decades, I've been on a quest to learn everything I can about leadership, obsessed with what makes the best leaders so good. After running companies small and large for the last 20 years, today I speak on stages all across the world to audiences who are interested in that same question. My name's John Laurito, and I'm your host. I invite you to join me on this journey as we explore this topic. What makes the best leaders so good? Welcome to Tomorrow's Leader. All right. Welcome to today's episode of Tomorrow's Leader, where we dive deep on all things leader related. Of course, the most important person to lead is yourself. So we're going to focus today on all kinds of good things you can take away. We've got a fantastic guest on today I'm really excited about, and I will let him get into his story. But Tim Allison is the host of a top 100 podcast called Screw the Naysayers. Fantastic podcast with terrific guests. He's a business entrepreneur, a best-selling author. He's a speaker. He's a business coach. Wow, this guy has a fascinating story. So, Tim, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
John, it's my absolute pleasure, man.
Great. Well, listen, you really do have a fascinating story. So, I would love to just start with that, and maybe you could share with the audience, you know, your background and start us off with taking us back a bit.
Well, you know, you're talking to a guy with a lot of gray hair, John, so I can go a long way back. I mean, I guess the thing that most people have focused on in my past life, I don't pay much attention to it now, but I mean, when I was 31, John, I was living in the city of Toronto, in Canada's largest city, it still is today, but had one of the top paying sales jobs in the country. I think it was certainly in the top 2% of wage earners, you know, at the time. And so in my generation, that's what you aspired to do. Like, you went to college, you went to university, your goal was to move up that corporate ladder as fast as you could, and, you know, and get married and get a house and have kids. And I had all that. I mean, you know, and I was just rocketing up the corporate ladder. But, you know, what people didn't see is that I was really very unhappy. And, you know, on the job itself, back then, I blamed the job. I know now it was, you know, nothing to do with the job. It's the way I was managing my life in the lakes. But I mean, it was just chewing me up. So I quit. And in those days, you know, it's fairly common to hear stories today about people leaving six-figure incomes and moving on. A six-figure income in 1988, what I was making then would equate to about $350,000 in today's dollars as an annual salary.
That's big money to walk away from.
Well, yeah. And not only did I quit, but my wife's from this little fishing village in rural Nova Scotia, Canada. Her family has roots that go back here 250 years. But even today, it's still very isolated. But in those days, it was like, you know, like we're talking, the internet existed, but the World Wide Web was not yet in place. And it was a 4-hour drive to the nearest airport and wow, all these kind of things. So we moved there, and I started an educational software company, is what we would have called it in the day, because the word e-learning or computer-based learning like didn't even exist. People hadn't even started to think about using computers very much to teach. And
yeah.
And, so that was the short part. I ran that business for 18 years with some modest success. I mean, certainly the top line numbers are interesting. They, you know, I hit about 10 million, but I always tell people, if you had a business, I didn't make $10 million, in terms of what went in my pocket.
Wow. Let me ask you this. Obviously that's a major risk. Was there something that drew you to Nova Scotia in particular? What was kind of your pull there?
Well, it's interesting. I didn't see it as a major risk. I mean, I did right up until the day that I quit. But yeah, it was Nova Scotia. It's my wife's hometown. And we had actually lived here when we first got married for about 4 years. And like a lot of young people in Nova Scotia, the jobs just aren't here. Like, and they're still not here. Like, young people pretty much are faced in my community still today, for the most part, unless you want to be a teacher, be one of the few people to work in a bank or something, and even those jobs are largely disappearing. The men worked in good, and they're great people, but they worked in fishing boats and in the forest and in construction. Those are my friends. Mm-hmm. That's what they do. And they can, you know, they humble me with their ability to do things. These hands weren't cut out to do that kind of work. The community had gotten in my heart. And I think the thing that I now realize now, when I look back, I mean, we all have certain hints in our childhood of what we're supposed to be doing. And mostly they get beaten out of us, or we're certainly not tuned or trained to be looking for them. For me, as a kid growing up, my most joyous times were all spent outdoors. They were the summers that I spent at my grandfather's camp. He had a little camp on a lake. It was a very basic, you know, tin roof, bunk beds, that kind of stuff. But, you know, a kid could sit there with a fishing rod all day and catch fish, and had a little fiberglass rowboat that I could go out and puddle around in. And you know what? I mean, I didn't realize it at the time, but being around nature, which I have here in Nova Scotia, is I don't think I would ever be happy, you know, without it. Mm-hmm. And yet I was in a downtown Toronto, you know, I was getting up in the morning. I was facing an hour and a half drive to work unless I left at 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. So I would leave at 6 a.m. to do it in 25 minutes. I'd work in the downtown corridor, either driving my car to various places or getting on the subway out of an office tower, going into other office towers. Wow. I would then look at the traffic and I would say, well, I'm not going to spend an hour and a half getting home. So I would either stay in the office or go down to the pub underneath the office and have a beer or two. Then, you know, go home. Kids were getting ready to go to bed, or maybe were even already in bed. Dinner was reheated.
Oh, wow.
And rinse, you know, wash, rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
Lifestyle.
And you're spending like 15 hours a week in the car. I mean,
but actually what made it way worse is I also spent 2 weeks out of four traveling across the country.
Oh,
so, I mean, I was, and it wasn't always broken up like that. It was probably most weeks I was traveling for 2 or 3 or 4 days. And,
yeah.
And, you know, as I pushed my way up the corporate ladder, the other thing that happened is that I was the guy with the expense account. So every time I hit town, everybody wanted to go out for the indulgent dinner with the expensive foods and the expensive wines. And actually, my boss would have killed me if I didn't do that, either with an employer, most importantly, with a client. Because his view was, don't waste your time. Go break bread. But, you know, I mean, try and maintain. I didn't have the self-discipline.
Yeah.
I was drinking way too much. I was gaining weight. I was swallowing a bottle of Pepto-Bismol every night. every night, a whole bottle. And wow. I was still had heartburn.
Wow. So let me ask you this, though. I mean, that's you know, you'd made a change. I mean, you talked to a ton of people. I talked to a ton of people. There's a lot of people that are miserable with what they're doing for one reason or another. Maybe it's the travel. Maybe it's just the stress, or they just hate what they're doing, but they never make a change. What right. was it about? How did you do that? How did you really push yourself to do it?
I'll answer that question for myself, but maybe I'll just give something that I gained from one of my guests very early on in my podcasting career, and I've used it, you know, probably 100 times with other guests. I think the reality in life, John, is that change is inevitable for all of us, and so the question that we really have to be asking is are we going to consciously take control of the change, or are we going to sit back and wait for the universe to smack us about the side of the head? So it was, I think, way back on episode 11 of Screw the Naysayers, something like that, I had a guy named Kevin Bulmer on my show. And Kevin put it this way. He said that most of the people that he talks to, and I would tend to agree, that have gone through really big, dramatic changes, similar to the one that I went through, have faced some sort of infrastructure rattling event. So I've had people on, you know, on my show, like Marcus Aurelius Anderson, who was paralyzed. You know, he woke up in the hospital on his 40th birthday, paralyzed from the neck down, being told he'd never walk again, broken, divorced. So it was time for Marcus to change his life, you know, and so people have heart attacks. People have faced divorces. Kevin faced, he found out his wife was having an affair. He lost a job at a company that he had helped found. He really considered himself almost to be a co-founder. And he ended up in the hospital for health issues all within 7 days. Oh. So this is the universe saying, you know, you have to change. Yeah. So I was lucky, you know, and I want to come back to that universe point because I think it really applies today. But I was lucky, John, in this sense. I think there were two things going on. One is that Nova Scotia, you know, and anybody who's, it doesn't have to be Nova Scotia, but anybody who has found a place or been born in a place, doesn't matter, but which you just feel so strongly attached to that it's ripping your guts out when you're not there. That's kind of the feeling. So I definitely had that inside of me saying but the other thing was, is that my boss was a big, you know, unlike me, he was 6-something, a big intimidating guy, but I was like a mini me of Tom. I wanted to be just like him. He was the president of the Canadian operation. He was a hard driving, hard drinking, balls to the wall, you know, old time stings, when the times get tough, the tough get going, managed by with a lot of fear and intimidation and everything. But for, you know, I just fallen under his spell. And so he would say to me, he was 10 years older than me, and he would say, Timmy, and he was the only person in the world that I let him let call me that, but he'd say, Timmy, I wish I'd been, you know, I'd been where you are when I was your age. So he's basically saying I was moving up that scale faster than he was. Well, when he was 40 years old, he had a heart attack. I was in Montreal. I had just gone. So you get up in the morning, you drive out to the airport, you park your car, wait, get on the plane, sit on the runway. And I walk into the office and the phone's ringing and my boss's secretary, Tom's secretary, says, you have to come back to Toronto. I said, I just got here. I said, what's it? What? She said, I can't tell you, but you have to come back to Toronto. So I go back to the airport and I get home. And what I find when I get back to the office is he had just, you know, he was shouting on the phone. I believe at his son. I mean, which he had a temper on a speakerphone and he just keeled over. And he was fine. Like he recovered and everything, man. But I mean, it's almost like I had that infrastructure rattling event without it happening to me.
Yeah, it was like a warning sign. It was a wake up call, I'm sure, to you.
Right.
So was that a kind of a trigger for you?
Well, I think looking back, it was. I don't think I would have known it at the time. But what I'd really like to add, man, to sort of bring it into the relevancy of the kind of the environment we're in, you know, these days, Sean, is this. I know, because I've talked, you know, I bet you 200 of the 250 guests on my show to the time we're speaking have faced some sort of infrastructure rattling event, you know, that drove them to make a big change. Sometimes it's not health, but it's just something, the realization, eh? Well, what the universe, this is what I really believe is happening right now. And people can have their own, they can agree or disagree. Most of the people that I talk to on my show agree. As humanity and as individuals, what was going on in this world was crazy. Like, we were running at a pace that was not sustainable. We were not worried about our health. We were sure as hell weren't worried about the health of the environment. We're destroying this planet. And we're behaving as if it's normal to accept the life of drudgery. And you know, I hate my job, but I, you know, that's what everybody hates their job. I just got to keep doing it. And I really believe, John, that the universe, whatever your belief system is, I mean, I'll just choose to use the word universe. But I think, you know, the universe just got a big old stop button and said, pause, and slammed it down and said, time out. Because you humans are just too damn stupid to see what you're all doing. Mm-hmm. And if we all stay on this path, it's going to lead to individual destruction and also the destruction of our communities and of our planet. Mm-hmm. So what's happened here? And I'm not undermining the reality, the brutal reality for some people of what they're facing right now. Mm-hmm. People have lost their lives. And other people, you know, businesses that have worked very, very hard, put everything into their business, those businesses, some of them aren't going to survive. I'm not going to deny that in this kind of upheaval, people will have lost their jobs. There's people, they won't be listening to this show because they got other concerns, but there are people right now that aren't sure if they're going to eat tomorrow, mm-hmm. you know, in North America, in Australia, in Europe, you know, countries where we should be able to do better, but it's real, eh? But we've got an opportunity to take the steps back. One of my guests the other day said, dial things back to zero. Dial back to zero. Take a look at the way you were living your life. Mm-hmm. How have you been spending your money? Are you spending the money on the things that are really important to you? If that job, if you're staying in that job because you think you need that income, do you really need that income? Mm-hmm. You know, what would you do without if you could trade it for real happiness? Mm-hmm. You know, would your kids prefer that you be making that 200 grand so that they can go to all of the activities and hang out with all and wear all the right clothes mm-hmm. and never see you? Mm-hmm. Or would they prefer that you had far less money and maybe they didn't get to play every organized sport? They just had mom and dad around more to be with them and to do things and to take them out in the country to go fishing or whatever the hell it is. And mm-hmm. so I think that's really what I'm trying to emphasize right now is that we really have to, every single one of us, take a step back. And mm-hmm. and I realize if you're struggling to survive today, I'm not lecturing you.
Yeah.
It's, for some people, just getting through what's going on right now is a big accomplishment.
Yeah.
But for those of us that aren't, it's time to take three steps back, not one.
Yeah. No, it makes total sense. And, you know, I think people just go down a road that they have been on, even if it's not a good road, just because it's harder to change. It's harder to make a change. And it's easier to stay on that rocky road, even if there's a path that's a turnoff that it looks like a great road, just because they don't know exactly where it's going to go. It's just easier to stay on that rocky path. And
it's always easier. But the problem here is, too, when you talk about, you know, managing or beating yourself, the difficulty here is that for almost all of us, you know, our fear of failure is greater than our ability to believe that we can get the things that we want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have been brainwashed since birth almost. We're not born believing in limitations. We're, you know, parents that know that once kids can figure out how to stand on 2 feet, they're pretty exploratory and they're really not very fearful. And so we do have to protect them and stop them from falling off cliffs, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But the problem is that by the time our kids stop listening to us, which Seth Godin on my show said it's probably around the age of 8, that once your kids are about 8, they're not paying any attention to what we say as parents. They're watching us. Mm-hmm. They're modeling the behavior after us. And then we turn them over to a compliance-based education system where our kids are told to sit down, shut up, behave, and wait for instructions. Mm-hmm. And that is how you prosper. You know, Seth said on my show that getting an A in school today is proof of compliance. And yet, how many parents are going to be, you know, Johnny got the great report card and Billy over there only got C, ha, 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 he's not so smart. Guess who's probably going to be far more successful in life right now?
Right. You look
the
at all the
challenging things.
Yeah. Extremely successful people that didn't get A's or didn't even go to school. In some cases, you know, that's a good point. I've heard you talk before about the importance of living in alignment with your values and what happens when you don't. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you almost die, which is what was happening to me. And again, if only they taught me this kind of stuff growing up. So, you know, I give you, you know, real examples. Family, like I came, my parents divorced after 30 years. And so I was my older brother was 6 years older. He'd moved out. My teen years were spent when I realized this is nothing compared to what a lot of people face. I wasn't worried about having a roof over my head. Nobody abused me or anything, but I watched my mother and father verbally abuse each other for 6 years of yelling and screaming. And I saw images of my mother crawling on the floor, drooling like a dog because she was so upset about things and all this kind of stuff. So I had sworn to myself that, you know, that I would, you know, family was going to be priority for me. And that if we had kids, if I was blessed enough to have children, that I was going to be a present father. And that we were going to, you know, understand what it meant to, you know, to be a parent and all of these kind of things. And so there I was with two young children, you know, they were, you know, when I quit, my oldest was 5 and my daughter had just turned 1. You know, I was spending 50% of my business time on the road. A lot of the other time, you know, not present. And even when I was home, I wasn't present. So, you know, my job was in conflict, with my family values. I valued integrity. And, you know, honestly, the 1980s in business and the business world was a cutthroat step on your, you know, you do whatever you need to get to the top. Mean got promoted. Kind was, you know, good guys finish last was very much the mantra of business in those days. And I definitely saw, because it was a public company, I saw them doing all sorts of things that I knew were not really in the long-term interest of the shareholders or of, you know, of their customers, because they were on this third quarter push or fourth quarter push and just wanted to push, you know, get more revenues on the books. And it didn't matter if later, you know, things got screwed up. And so I saw people, you know, and I was being told to go out there and encourage people to do things that I didn't think was in their best interest. And it's not, it was businesses. I mean, people were dying as a result of it, but you know, that was bothering me. You know, my health was compromised. If my, you know, I'm no good to my family or my kids if I'm not healthy. And I won't bother, you know, today with the details, but I did have a lot of childhood health issues that, you know, hereditary things. And yet here I was, you know, living a lifestyle that was just, you know, you shouldn't be drinking a bottle of Pepto-Bismol every night when you're in your 20s. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't come home from work too tired to have sex either. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, these things are not normal. And so, you know, health is one of my values. And being in nature, being around my friends. I mean, my friends in the time that I'd lived in Nova Scotia, that's where I had learned what real friendships were about. Mm-hmm. These were people who would ask you, how's work or how's business? Especially when I got back here and started my own business. My best friend would say, hey, Tim, how's the business? But he would want an answer like good, great, horrible. You know, one word would be sufficient. The thing is, he cared more than any of the other people that I used to talk to in Toronto, and I'd pour my heart out about what everything was going on. They didn't really care. They just wanted to, you know, get into yapping back and forth about the details.
Yeah.
People out here, they don't want you to dump your job or your, but if you're having trouble, they really want to know. And if there was something they could do, but mostly they can't. So, yeah. Okay, you know, hope it works out for you type of thing.
Yeah.
So what happens, though, and you'll talk to so many people, if you're living your life that's not aligned with the things that you really care about, the exercise that I always challenge people to do, John, is to take a – I'm an old-fashioned guy. I still actually use one of these things. It's called a pen, if people aren't familiar with them.
Got one right
yeah, there you go. But you can do it electronically. Yeah. I like writing things. But I would take a piece of paper, and I would write the word, the phrase, I value at the top of the page, and then – answer the questions. Mm-hmm. And then try and get it down to a list of, you know, 5, 6, 7. So I value family, friends, health, respect, integrity, and the environment. Mm-hmm. And every decision I make in my life is filtered through those things. I don't even have to think about it anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just, how is this decision going to affect my family, my friends, my health, you know, my sense of respect? Like, for example, I, you know, for 25 years now, I can say one of the pleasures of being self-employed, I only work with people who like and respect me and that I like and respect. Mm-hmm. I will walk away, and I have walked away from six figures when that hasn't been the case. Mm-hmm. Just not interested. Life's way too short, you know? Yeah. So you can filter those things. But if you're unhappy, I promise you, anybody who's unhappy in this very moment, something is threatening one of those values. So if financial security is threatened, then you might feel that your family or your health is threatened. But mm-hmm. something, anytime in our life, even when things are, when people get puzzled is when, oh God, the job's good. I'm making all sorts of money. I can do whatever I want. How come I'm unhappy? Write down your bloody list of values and mm-hmm. then figure out what is in your job or your life that's in conflict with those values. Mm-hmm. And once you find it, you don't have a choice. You either have to fix it or you have to change your situation because mm-hmm. you will never truly be, you know, be able to feel fulfilled or to be happy.
Yeah. I you know, I've always been a big believer in knowing your values and the importance of living in alignment. And fortunately, I had some great mentors around me early in my career. But I've also found over time values, my values have changed. I remember as young in the business, money was one of my core values, wealth. And that was what I based some decisions around. And that's not now. So I think that's also an important point, is that you need to reflect on them periodically and look at your values. How important, you know, you talk about the people that are around you. I mean, obviously that's critical. You hear people talk about that. There's a lot of people that know that there are people in their lives that are not contributing to helping them become the better version of themselves. I mean, how important is that? Is there a lot of substance to that, making sure that you pluck the weeds of the garden of life or surround yourself with the right people?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, if you know, you are the, I think it's Jim Rohn, but you are the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with. And so, you know, the challenge that I think a lot of people face is that if you're on a growth trajectory, then a lot of the people that you used to hang around with may not be on that same growth trajectory. And what's going to, you know, that's the part I like to talk about, because that's when it gets hard. If you've got people around you who are always, like my show is Screw the Naysayers. So if you're around people who are always, you know, pulling you down and all that kind of stuff, well, you know, you really have to distance yourself from those kind of folks. If they're family members, then you just have to be very selective about what you talk to them about so they don't get into your mind. But what gets, you know, what we have to learn to deal with is over time is that if we're on a journey, like I'm 62 years old, you know, and yet I'm still very much on a journey of self-discovery. I'm still every single day trying to learn something new about myself and the world and my belief system. I'm not sure that my values have changed. I mean, I wouldn't even, money's not really a value, but and I just sort of have to put that out there, but my beliefs have certainly changed and my, you know, my knowledge. So, you know, what you need to do is sort of create environments there where you can still have the good socializing times and because you've grown up and you maybe spent a lifetime raising kids together and all that. So you can still have those good times, but you have to have people in your world who are trying to evolve at the same pace that you are. And that's the beauty of technology like this, it's the beauty of podcasting. It's the beauty of, you know, building relationships and, you know, talking. But if you're particularly if you're feeling, you know, somewhat insecure about something that you're, you know, you're trying to achieve, the people that are around you, the naysayers that are around you, can actually, you know, they kill more dreams than people will ever really understand. Mm-hmm. You have to choose your friends wisely. And especially when you're not feeling great, then you have to make deliberate choices. Who am I going to talk to right now? Mm-hmm. You know, who could I talk to right now that isn't going to bring me down, but it's going to get me, you know, back up.
Yeah. That seems like one of the hardest things for people to do is change the surroundings, either physically or the people around them. That just seems like a major challenge.
Well, but it goes back to what you said earlier. People resist change. It's just easier to keep things the way they are than it is to change things.
And right.
You have to be ready. You know, one of the things I've really learned, John, as a business coach and a mentor, I've done a lot of mentoring over the years. You can't help people until they're ready.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't talk somebody into being ready. You know, they have to have hit the point where they want to change something.
Yeah.
Then it's possible.
Yeah. So I know we don't have a whole lot of time. There's so much I want to ask you about. But just real quick, when you went to Nova Scotia, you started your e-learning business. You know, how was it right away? You knew you were okay. Yeah, I've made the right decision. Did it take a long time?
Yeah. No.
Were you regretting the move at any point?
Yeah. Well, I was never giving up. I mean, the thing here was that my why was big enough at that stage of my life. There was no damn way I was dragging I'd already moved back to Toronto once because we couldn't cut it here. I wasn't going back. I mean, and that's really, I think when your why gets to that point, then the human mind has phenomenal capacity to overcome things and we will find a way. But if it's not that, you know, if we don't care enough about it, that's why I say to people, if you really aren't, you know, I got to qualify this. I was going to say, if you really do feel like quitting, I don't mean that if you're trying something and it's not working and you keep doing it over and over and over again, that you should keep doing that. Because a lot of people think when they hear winners never quit, that that's what it means. It's not, because winners quit all the time, but they don't quit on their vision and their dream. So for me, it was about creating a life, a career around the kind of life I wanted to live, a business around the kind of life I wanted to live. So I didn't really care at that stage what that business was or what it looked like. That business went through all sorts of iterations. And when I started, I had no plan. Like, I had zero plan and no backup plan. I just went out and started talking to people. And I will tell you that I think the first 3 years were pretty rough. And again, hindsight, you know, I look back now, I realize, you know, that my own mindset was largely responsible for that. Because when I got here, people had told me I was crazy to make the move, it'll never work, that you'll go drag and bet your ass back to Toronto and everything. Well, I proved them wrong. So I said, screw you, I'm going to do it. But without realizing it, I had accepted the idea that I could either have this lifestyle in this rural community, or I could have a, you know, an exciting, well-paying career or business. But really in my mind, I didn't think I could have both. So I used to tell myself, and anybody who asked me, that my goal in life is to make enough money to put food on the table and keep a roof over our heads. And John, that's what I did for 3 years. I mean, it was not much different. In fact, it was in many ways worse than getting a paycheck from somebody, because I had to write the paycheck and I was never quite certain if that paycheck was going to be there. It was literally that, you know, we got by. Mm-hmm. It was when I was fortunate enough to meet a man that became, rest in peace, Roy, but he came a 20 some odd year mentor, you know, of mine, that, you know, he sort of kicked me in the butt and he said, look, if you were successful in Toronto, why the hell can't you be, you know, just as successful in this little fishing village? But it was a journey and I tried all sorts of things. And the business, when I finally, when I finally hit a product that soared, it looked nothing like what I expected it to be. It just sort of happened because I kept trying things until something hit.
Yeah. Did you, at that point, you know, you had the mentality of just putting food on the table and making enough to do that. Were you aware of that at that time? And then you consciously changed your thought and started thinking bigger? Well, or was it just natural that you?
Well, I mean, I was aware of the thought, but I didn't realize it was limiting me.
Right.
And it was really only when I was sitting, Roy Zabrick's guy's name, and I met Roy. It was a winter in Nova Scotia. The snow was high. And, you know, I got a phone call from a buddy and he said, hey, there's this company down in San Diego that's got a software program that you guys might be interested in repping up in Canada. And the deal is, if you fly down there, they'll pay for your hotel and your meals and everything. You got to listen to their spiel and everything, but it'll be a good party. So I looked at the snow and I went to my wife. I said, sorry, dear, but I've got to go on this important business trip. and I went. And it was a totally different product. But I remember sitting there on about the second night. Well, you know, it was a small group. There was maybe 20 people, you know, that were talking to us. And Roy was sitting there and he was drinking a Tanqueray martini. I still remember it. And we were talking. And I told him a bit about what I had going on before and what is going on in Nova Scotia. And he looked at me and he said, Tim, and this is people that are younger than the age of 40 won't even remember this, but back in those days, you actually had to mail your payment to the credit card company with a check in an envelope. He said, Tim, I write a check to American Express every month and I mail it. And he says, it goes to someplace in North Dakota or South Dakota or whatever. He said, do you think I care where it goes? I said, well, no, probably not. He said, well, why the hell do you think that just because you're living in a fishing village in Nova Scotia that people are going to care where you're living? And I don't know, he followed it up. He actually got on a plane and because I still left San Diego thinking, well, it's interesting, but it was a big step up. I was selling $500 products. This was a $50,000 product. I mean, it was quite a change, but he got on a plane. He flew up to Nova Scotia at his own expense and lugged along the computer monitors. And I dragged him around to show it to a few people and kind of the rest is history. But so that's why I'm so, you know, passionate. That's really why I started Screw the Naysayers. I want people to realize that it's our self-limiting beliefs. Mm-hmm. It's when we tell ourselves that something is not possible and it's never going to be possible. Mm-hmm. And I've learned enough and I've talked to enough people with far more, you know, scientific knowledge and everything else, but I get the principles of it. We think we're making our decisions with our rational mind and we're not. I mean, the bottom line is we're making almost all of our decisions are coming from our subconscious mind. And the outcomes that we get in our life are coming from our subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. So when you say things like, I can't have a successful career in Nova Scotia, the best I'm going to get is to make a decent living, then any effort you make to try and have a successful career, your subconscious mind is going to resist because it says, well, no, that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing if you say, you know, money is the root of all evils. People say stupid things like that because they see certain individuals who do evil things with money. I'm so tempted to name names, but I won't. But, you know, the danger of something like that is that you say that to your mind and your mind says, okay, money's bad. So when we go out, John, and we try and make money, it resists because mm-hmm. it says, no, we don't want money. Money's bad. I mean, we train our subconscious mind with all of these crazy messages, or if we tell ourselves that we're imposters, mm-hmm. or if we tell ourselves that we're not worth that amount of money, the mind just associates negative emotions with money and it mm-hmm. protects us, you know. Yeah. So
when you had started Screw the Naysayers, that was the purpose. You found yourself, your own experiences, you know, validated or proved that theory. And that's what is your mission exactly with your podcast? What
are you trying to do? I mean, I want people to shatter self-limiting beliefs and I want to inspire them to do that. And I want to educate and advise them through my guests and their knowledge and stories on practical things that they can do to live the life they want, like live a life that aligns with the things that they value to get what they want in life. I mean, one thing I want to be clear of is I like money a lot. I mean, money, until our society changes, those that have money can do more and have a greater impact and help more people and have more experiences mm-hmm. than those that don't. Like, I don't use money to acquire a lot of assets. If you come to my house, much to my wife's chagrin, you'll find 30-year-old furniture in a lot of the rooms. Mm-hmm. But, you know, pre-COVID-19, I think we were in Europe 17 or 18 times in the last 10 years. You know, it's my wife and I traveling around and gathering experiences. Our kids have traveled the world. They're in their 30s now, but we took them all over the world to see different cultures and stuff. I accept that, money's, important. And I think I digressed there and lost the gist of what your question
was. No, that's okay. I money's the result of doing what you're passionate about and doing great things and giving value, providing value. And you're doing that. So you're incredibly busy. You're doing the podcast, you're doing speaking, you're writing, you're coaching people. What do you enjoy? Just out of curiosity, what do you enjoy most? If you could do one of the things, or do you just love doing all of them? What's your passion?
You know, podcasting has definitely changed my life, man. And right now, I mean, I'm not sure exactly when this is going to air, but right now in the middle of the, you know, we're still right smack in the middle of the COVID-19 situation. I'm actually publishing my podcast 7 days a week. both to YouTube and to all the podcasting platforms. I love the interviews. Having passed 250 episodes, I'm getting to the point where I'm talking to, you know, I had Jack Canfield on the show the other day from Chicken Soup for Your Soul. I've had Seth Godin. I've had, you know, Mark Victor Hansen. You know, I'm getting such an opportunity to learn. So I don't think I would trade that, you know, for anything. By nature, I'm a mentor. My frustration is that we've destroyed what the word mentor and mentorship means, because people believe today that, you know, what you need to do is go find a mentor who's going to donate their time to you and spend and really help you. Well, I do that all the time with young people in my community and people that I run into. But, you know, the reality is what I think most people need in their lives right now. I'm going to get inundated with hate mail from all the business coaches and life coaches out there, some of whom I have a lot of respect for. But I don't think we need a lot of coaching on how to lead our lives. I think we need a lot of mentoring. So in my heart, that's when I say I'm a business coach. For the most part, if it makes people more comfortable to think of it that way, great. But I'm really probably not likely to tell you what to do. If I see you going down a path because I've been down that path before and I can absolutely predict what's going to happen, because there, it is possible after 30 years of entrepreneurial experiences and 4 businesses and working with hundreds, if not thousands, others, you can see when certain outcomes are definite. I'll say that. But the harder part is to say, are you on the right track or not in terms of getting what you want? Nobody can really predict that. You see, because the reality is that what we need to do is make sure you're asking the right questions. And so mentoring, I suppose, mentoring, podcasting, I'm not, you know, 1-1-A. I love speaking. I don't do very much of it these days because the physical travel is not so easy for me. So I'm pretty selective, you know, in the invitations that I accept. I love the moment. I don't love the getting there and, you know, the coming.
Yeah. What you talk about questions. What do you think is the most important question people need to be asking themselves right now?
Well, you know, in its most simplistic sense, what is it that you really want? I mean, you know, but to answer that question, you have to allow yourself to believe that you can get it. And the problem is, especially when times get tough like this, people know what they don't want. I don't want to go back to that job that, you know, that I'm realizing now that I'm not having to go into that office every day, how toxic it was. I don't want, to be micromanaged every day of my life. I do want, you know, if you're creative, I do want to have opportunities to, you know, to create. But people really seriously have to step back and ask, what is it you really want in life? And the people I spend my time with are business owners. And it's like, what do you really want from your business? Because this is another problem. Everybody says, ask a business owner, you know, especially a lot of these newer business owners, but why'd you start your business or what do you hope to achieve? Oh, I want to have an impact. Like, you're going to hear that word. It's the most overused word in the business vocabulary. I'm not opposed to having an impact, but that, I got a newsflash for somebody. Unless you're Mother Teresa, there's a very little chance that is going to be a strong enough why for you to deal with all the crap that you're dealing with now or the crap that's going to come, you know, in the future. Mm-hmm. You need a personal why. And I think we've made it to the point where people are ashamed to say, well, you know what I want? I want to be able to control my own schedule. So that when my kids are going off to sporting events, if I want to work at night and have the freedom to be the driver for my daughter's basketball team or something like that, I can go do that. I want the freedom to choose who I work with. I want, I do want to make enough money to provide financial security for my family and to be able to, you know, collect experiences and to educate them, you know, that there's world outside of North America, for one thing, which is just so hugely important that people realize that we do not have it all figured out in this very young continent that we live in. So, you know, what is it you really want? And then ask if the way you've got your business or your life, the direction you're pointed in, is it going to get you what you want? And if it's not, then you better make a change. Mm-hmm. And people are just, they don't answer it honestly because they're convinced they can't have it. Mm-hmm.
Outstanding. Great stuff. Well, I know we're at the close here. We've been here with Tim Allison, the host of Screw the Naysayers podcast, Top 100 podcast, fantastic podcast. So make sure you tune in. Best-selling author, speaker, a big influencer, and I'm pleased and very grateful to have you on the show. And I appreciate it, Tim. How do people get a hold of you if they want more information on you and what you're doing?
Yeah, sure. First of all, thanks so much for having me on the show, John. I make a big effort to get on shows early on because I remember people, you know, jumping on to help me, and I'm just delighted to be here. So, look, the easiest place is screwthenaysayers.com. You'll find just about everything there. You will find, Screw the Naysayers YouTube channel, and the Screw the Naysayers podcast is up, you know, obviously in all of the platforms. And like I say, right now, 7 episodes a week, 25 minutes or so, all pretty inspiring stuff. And I'm also really active on LinkedIn. So Tim Allison with 1L on LinkedIn. I almost never turn down a connection request. I certainly never turn down a connection request with a little note. So say you heard me on John's show, and we'll connect there. And awesome. Just wishing everybody, you know, to stay safe, but really for those that are able to realize that, you know, mankind has faced a lot worse than what we're dealing with right now. We're going to be just fine.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you, Tim Allison. And thank you, everybody, for joining us on today's episode of Tomorrow's Leader. Be sure to like, add comments, share, subscribe, and we look forward to having you at our next episode. Thanks, everybody. Take care. Thanks again, Tim.